When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Gaia.com, the on-demand streaming TV service that helps you achieve your highest potential at your convenience. To get your first month at only 99 cents, visit gaia.com/my7chakras. My 7 Chakras, episode 221.
In the moment when we are connected with Mother Earth, we are connected with the universe.
The 7 Chakras. Swirling vortices of energy positioned throughout our body from the base of the spine to the crown of the head. For thousands of years, this ancient wisdom has been passed on from master to disciple. What are the functions of these energy centers? And could these chakras help you unlock your destiny and find your true purpose? Welcome to My 7 Chakras, and now your host, Aditya Jai Kumar.
What's up, Action Tribe? AJ here, founder and host of My 7 Chakras, the show where we dive deep into the ancient world to uncover nuggets of wisdom that will help you find your life's purpose and beyond. So if you have a burning question about the mysteries around you, about life and within you, then you are at the right spot. But before diving into today's interview, I'd like to ask you one question. Do you like coming across new and exciting spiritual books to read? If the answer is yes, then you will love what I have in store for you. I've put together a document containing 21 must-read spiritual books that have been recommended by our special guest that come on our show. And you're going to really love this list that I put together. To download the list, all you got to do is visit the link my7chakras.com/reading list. Once again, that's our website, my7chakras.com/reading list. Download it, print it out, and then read those books one by one until you get a completely new perspective on life as well as the universe that is within you. You're going to love this one. And with that, I am really excited to bring you our featured guest for today, Daniel Mittal. Daniel, are you ready to inspire?
Oh, yes. Thank you, Aditya. Thank you for your wonderful podcast and the difference you are making on this world with this beautiful, beautiful radio shows. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Daniel Mittal is a world traveler master helping people understand their intimate connection to their inner selves. He is the first person in the world in modern times to explain and define the origin of the ancient heart imagery system. Heart imagery, the ancient system that originates from ancient Tibetan, Sumerian, and Vedic spiritual mystery schools, is connected to the highest number of mystery school 555. It is related to the Adamic race with the power of dreaming and reversing the past, present, and the future. Daniel began teaching Zen meditation in 1981, and from 81 to 92, he practiced the spinal breathing meditation, later found out that in fact he was practicing the Kriya Pranayama of Kriya Yoga Great Master Babaji. He has been teaching heart imagery workshops worldwide since 96. After spending a couple of years in meditation in north of Tibet in 1999, Daniel created the School of Heart. 10 years later, in Toronto, he created the School of Meditation. Daniel also teaches three very important workshops: Kriya Yoga, the spinal breathing, the power of the heart, and inner healing, and journeys into the heart. And he's actually here for the second time on My 7 Chakras. So welcome to the show, Daniel.
Thank you. Thank you. And much love and hello to the all people who are listening to us. And from all my heart, I just want to say how grateful I am to be here again.
Awesome. So, in fact, I am really grateful, Daniel, that you have taken your time to appear on our show, even though if somebody looks at your schedule, they will know that you're a really busy person. Like, you're traveling all the time, you're conducting workshops, you're giving lectures, you're teaching kids as well. You do a lot of work for kids and teach them meditation. So you're doing so many things, but at the same time, you've taken out time to speak with us and speak to Action Tribe. So really grateful for that and for coming on our show the second time around.
Yeah, thank you. It's funny you said that, because 2 weeks ago, now I'm here in Toronto, but the last weekend I was teaching in San Diego, and 2 weeks ago, actually, on Monday, I was in Bucharest. On Tuesday, I was flying to London. On Wednesday, from London, I was flying to Toronto. And on Thursday, I was flying to San Diego. So I was in 4 days in four different cities, the old world distance, I would say. So for me, it was such a funny experience to go from one airplane to another and to meditate up there. I really enjoyed it.
Wonderful, wonderful. And also, I mean, not just traveling, but traveling and doing something that calls to you, right? And doing something that really helps you contribute to the world in a completely different way and changing so many lives, right? So it takes fatigue, I guess, or, you know, tiredness takes on a whole new different meaning, right? I'm guessing.
Absolutely. Sure. Yes.
So once again, thanks a lot for joining us. Let's begin with what we always begin with, which is an inspirational quote. So my question is, what is your favorite inspirational quote as on today? And how do you apply that quote in your life?
Well, I have to remember what a really good friend and mentor and like a father for me, Dramvalo Melchizedek, said in a book that we wrote together, actually, Journeys into the Heart. And he said there the fact that in the moment when we are connected with Mother Earth, we are connected with the universe. This is the quote from this book that we wrote together, our last book. And I believe I apply this even when I'm not teaching Mother, or I'm not touching Mother, or I'm not teaching really a group of people, like I'm in an airplane, so or I'm just walking, or I'm just. Like now, I'm in this huge building. I'm at level 22nd, and I can still feel Mother Earth energy. I apply it. I know it's here. It's with me. It's in my heart. I think this is a really important inspirational quote that all the humanity, especially today, if we see what's going on all over the world with how much destruction is happening all over the world with forests, with the water, with the mountains. I think we really need to connect with Mother Earth, and when we do that, we really connect with our hearts. And if we connect with our heart, as Dramvalo said, we are connected with the universe. Very important thing.
Wonderful. Thanks a lot for sharing that really powerful quote. Action Tribe, connection does not have to be complex. It can be as simple as reestablishing that connection with Mother Earth. For example, if you're stressed out or if you're worried, maybe you're at your office or maybe you're outdoors somewhere, just take out your slippers and go for a walk or a stroll in the beach or maybe on the earth. Because establish that connection with Mother Earth, as we're learning today, you connect with your heart. And once you connect with your heart, you connect with the universe. So Daniel, let's start this interview from the very beginning. Could you talk to us about any recollection that you have from your early childhood days? How did it all begin for you?
Oh, that's a very good question. My mom told me when I was a child, I was like 1 year and a half. Mm-hmm. I used to effectively to steal on her plastic bucket that she used to take she used to wash these things. Hand, at that time we didn't have a washing machine with the hand, and she used to go outside with this small plastic bucket, and I used to take it after she put it back in the house and to turn it the other way, and I used to stay there in with my legs in lotus posture, my mom told me, and with my eyes closed, So I was just later, I remember, already like I was 2 years and a half, 3 years when I started to have the recollection of me sitting on that plastic bucket and closing my eyes, and my tongue was touching the roof of the mouth. I still remember my brother was making fun of me, saying, "What's wrong with you? Why you keep the tongue up on the roof of the mouth?" For me, it was like, I really thought all the people are keeping the tongue on the roof of the mouth. And it's just part of the Kriya Yoga, this Kechari Mudra, actually. So I really, I thought that's normal. When my brother told me, "No, that's, put your tongue down." I said, "No, I feel better with my tongue up." And it was funny. I have this memories, this recollection of my early, really early childhood. I'm really grateful for my mom and my grandfather. Actually, he was one of the high priests in the Orthodox Church, and he was leading that. And they allow me, beyond their, I would say, the Orthodox Church, the Catholic Church, but especially the Orthodox Church, they have their really strictly rules. And my grandfather was such a wise man. He really understood what that is, something, a connection with divinity that his grandson has with the universe. And at that time, I was just 2 years old, he allowed me to. He didn't say anything to my mom, like I was doing something wrong, or in a time where really, we're talking about 1969, 1970, when in the Orthodox culture, there was no such thing as yoga, lotus posture. And I was very, very fortunate to be surrounded by really, I would say, wonderful people. My parents, my grandparents, my brother, and all my friends, they saw me as a, I wouldn't say as a case. it would be maybe too much to say that, but they had a sort of understanding, and I would like to say they tolerate my behavior, sitting hours and hours in quietness on that plastic bucket, and just I was just quiet with my spine straight and my eyes closed and my tongue up, and I could feel in on my spine. It was like drops, like tingling, like drops of light. It was very interesting, my feeling when I was a child. I always liked to touch my spine and to feel like inside there were like circles of light. Later I understood, in fact, it was the energy moving from the base of the spine going up and down. I understood, let's say, in a different way. But when I was a child, I really enjoyed this really cozy, really nice feeling of energy moving in my body. I think that was the main thing that pushed me to stay in that posture hours and hours, because I really felt like I was transparent, I would say. I was I didn't exist. I was air. I was all over. And it was so good for me to, like, all the time I was telling my mother what she used to talk with my brother or with my father. And there were like five or six rooms far away from me. And I was telling them, "Why did you say that?" And my mom said, "How do you know you are here all the time?" Because on this transparency, I could hear in a different way, not in a normal way. And it was for me a really good experience. Later, I understood, of course, in a different way what happened to me. But as a start point, in this life I'm talking, not another life, as a starting point for me was a really good experience, powerful experience.
Wonderful. Thanks a lot for sharing that with us. It's so incredible to note that some of the experiences that we have as children, especially spiritual experiences, are so integral to our adult life, right? And how we are able to connect with spirit. So in my case, when I was a kid, yoga was sort of compulsory in my school. We had one of the lectures, which was a yoga lecture. And out of all the postures, the part that I liked the most was Shavasana, which was towards the very end. And I still remember the teacher used to guide us towards moving our consciousness throughout the different parts of the body and relaxing them one by one. And at that point, I did not logically know what was happening, but I just knew that I enjoyed the experience of relaxation. And that was it. I did it for a couple of years. And then, in school, academics takes up, right? Most of your part at a later stage.
Yes.
But then those vivid memories helped me reconnect with meditation and spirituality much later on. So thanks a lot for bringing that into our imagination right now. Now, I want to just quickly ask you, in fact, coming back to the present, what exactly is heart imagery?
Heart imagery is, I would say, the grandfather or grandmother, doesn't matter how we say it, of the whole spiritual system on this planet. In a sense that if we read the Sumerian tablets and if we listen to the great master from Tibet and if we listen from the Kabbalistic great master from Jerusalem and if we listen to the master, the Mayans, that they are talking about that system when an image used to change you. Even Carlos Castaneda in his books is talking about imagery. Anastasia, the great master from Siberia, she's talking about imagery. Tai Chi is imagery. Qigong is imagery. So basically, it seems that around 38,000 years ago, when the Adamic race started to move after the first garden, actually there were three gardens of Eden. It was one that is down now in Mediterranean Sea. The Cyprus, the island of Cyprus, is the only piece that remained. 38,000 years ago, Sicilia was connected with Africa. The geologists can confirm that. And it was a pen island there. That was the first Garden of Eden. But the second Garden of Eden was where is the Mesopotamia, where was Mesopotamia now is that places all the area of Iraq and Kuwait and the north towards Egypt, right? Mesopotamia. That was the second garden. But there is a place, the third garden, where not too many people know about it. I think the only book where it is written about this is Urantia. And this place is right near the Caspian Sea. It's an area which is between Iran and Turkmenistan. It's a mountain there. It's called Kapedag. This Kapedag mountain. So right there, it was the third garden of Eden. And Eden is coming. I don't know how many people know about that, but the name of the place, the headquarter, I would say, of our constellation is Identia. Identia, from there is coming Garden of Eden. They have some gardens there in the fourth and fifth dimension that there are breathtaking. So we call it Garden of Eden from there. So the third garden had a team there, we call it the Violet Race or Adamic Race, that the first and the most important system they used was heart imagery. In a sense that There was no meditation in that time. It was just a connection with the heart, because the heart contains the whole universe. So they learn to connect with the heart, and from the heart they learn to use different images. So the master who was teaching them was he or she, or they were giving images, and based on these images in the physical body. And the mental body, which is the left brain moving the energy to the left around the body and inside the body, and the emotional body, which is the right brain moving the energy to the right, at the same time, the left brain and right brain, they move energy like two two vortexes, two rotating fields around us. These are the mental and the emotional bodies. So this was the only way to balance, to harmonize on a planet that we have to remember about Lucifer rebellion and all what was happening on this planet. We're talking about 200,000 years ago when our planet, unfortunately, we joined this rebellion, and they call it in the holy books the fall of the man. So because we are, until that moment, the man, a human being, was able to live 600-800 years easy. Our body was using food and light, not just food how we are using today, but when you use food and light, that brings a performance in your cell that is unequaled by anything, by any pills, by anything we are doing today. So in that moment, on that time, so right after Adam and Eve coming here, and unfortunately their default, well, a new system came on this planet from the master, that we call it in that time imagery, heart imagery. And for thousands of years it was used, still in Sumerian tablets. They are talking, they said about their master god, they call Enlil, it was the name. They said, Enlil asked us to close our eyes, and he gave us an image. And suddenly, all of us, we were healed. Well, this is something very powerful that is coming from something, these clay tablets that are from 20,000 years ago. So basically, all this technique, heart imagery, it's very simple. You just use an image. So a master is giving you an image, you close your eyes, and that image inside of you, and I have to say that we are more than 7 billion people, would be sure that if I give, for example, an image, a horse, let's say I'll do a heart imagery with the whole planet, I can tell you each person can see this horse in a different way. The color of the horse, where is the horse, one is flying, one is in the middle of the universe, one is on eating the green grass. Each person, function of your energy, you see the same image in a different way from your perspective. And that helps you to balance your mental, emotional, and physical bodies.
Got it. So, I mean, it's really fascinating to note, like you mentioned, that heart imagery was not used by just one civilization, right? The Sumerians have talked about it, the Kabbalists, Mayans, Toltec wisdom, Tai Chi, and all these people. And this was started at a time where it was pre-meditation times. It was, I'm guessing, more simple. It's just the use of different images to heal the body, whether it's the physical body, the mental body, or the image, the emotional body. And sticking on the same topic of the heart, in a book and during your workshops, you talk a lot about the power of the heart, and it's so clear that the heart is way more than just an organ that pumps blood, right? It's more powerful than that. So could you talk to us a bit more about the power of our hearts?
Well, that's going to be a long talk. this is my favorite talk, actually.
Nice.
Well, our heart, and it is good you said, it's more than just a simple organ. I was talking with some really good, I would say, maybe the best specialist in the heart research, and I'm talking about the HeartMath Institute from California. And it's interesting to see how even the science today is backing up a lot of spiritual things. Because these doctors, these experts, they discover this huge electromagnetic field around the heart that we're not talking here about like half an inch, like the brain electromagnetic field. We're talking here about 4, 5, 6 feet around us, which is huge. So suddenly we realize that the heart is more than that. Plus, important, again, another scientific thing that HeartMath came with is the fact that the heart sends much more information to the brain than the brain to the heart. And maybe the most interesting thing is that inside of the heart we have more than 40,000 neurons. So basically we can say we have a sort of brain inside of the heart. So basically your brain can take a decision, but your heart from your brain can overcome the brain decision if the heart is let's say, in control, I would say. Rarely that happens, unfortunately, on our planet. Not too many people. Right. The brain usually is in control. But one of the reasons we're going to talk probably about the school of the heart and the power of the heart and the workshop related with the heart, one of the reasons I'm teaching the workshops is because I'm really positive. I really believe in us. I really believe in people. I'm literally going all over the world. Last year I was teaching in 62 countries. Imagine, we're talking about 52 weeks. So I had, for example, a couple of weeks when I visited one or two or three countries. So I'm literally going all over the world, and I see all the cultures, and I understand in a different way, from a different perspective. And I'm very, very positive. I believe the power of our hearts eventually is going to prevail beyond all the things that are happening and all the problems. I believe in us, and I believe the power of the heart is going to change, and we are going to be, all of us, sooner or later, in the heart. We will arrive there.
Got it. Now, you spoke about the fact that the heart is a very powerful organ, way beyond than just the fact that it does pump blood, but it's way beyond that. And it helps us heal. Could you talk to us about, because during your workshop, you teach people how to clean their past, right? Firstly, are you referring to healing of our past in this lifetime or several lifetimes before this? And then also, could you tell us, why do we need to cleanse our past in the first place?
Of course. Well, first, the heart, as it's obviously the generator of health in our body, because first the heart is a gate, it's a portal into the universe, and all the mystics, all the masters, they are talking about how if you move your spirit or your attention or intention from the brain down to your heart, basically you are going to find a completely new universe. And actually the Mayans, they said that the real universe around us, what we see, what we touch, actually they call it the illusion, the Maya. So it's interesting to understand from this perspective why the heart it is so important, and it is a healing generator. The second part of the question related with cleaning the past, I would say there should not be a spiritual or a teacher on this planet that is teaching spiritual topics without going through a cleaning the past session, in a sense that, you know, we are living in a polarity world. It's inevitable. Emotional traumas, belief patterns, and if we do not clean all these things from the past, for us, from the karmic point of view, it's not easy to achieve, let's say, that performance, that desire to connect with divinity in a right way. Whenever we have in the past an emotional trauma, that remains in our energy, and if we do not clean it, it's very hard to go into the heart. This is first thing. The second thing that happens is that emotional trauma all the time goes again and again and again. It's not like something happened 10 years ago. But because it's inside of you, you will always find something that triggers, again, that emotional trauma. So I would say you are going to live just in the past. So just for, at least for the sake of being healthy and living in the present, I think the cleaning the past is paramount. It's maybe the first thing that any school of meditation, any school of spirituality, doesn't matter if it's yoga or Tai Chi or Reiki or anything, it has to start with cleaning the past. I saw hundreds of spiritual teachers. They think they are spiritual. And they are teaching completely, completely wrong the students, in a sense that they are not clean. Now, when you are not clean, imagine, let's say, you do a Reiki session. If you, as a teacher or as a master, you keep that emotional trauma, that burden that brings you in that situation to be all the time in that emotional survival state of mind, how is possible that you can teach or heal other people? I'm very strict on this matter. All my students that are doing are teaching or healing, obligatory they have to go through cleaning the past. And you know what's interesting about cleaning the past? Cleaning the past is more than a cleaning. It's a forgiveness. Are you able to forgive your trespassers? Are you able to forgive the people who hurt you? And even more important, are you able to forgive yourself for maybe some things that you've done it, let's say, not in a right way? That's the reason cleaning the past is so, so important. And I'm really grateful you mentioned that. I really want to say thank you for you mentioning this really important part of any spiritual life.
Got it. Thanks a lot for sharing. Now, this event that's happening this weekend here in Vancouver, as we speak, you know, the event is happening on the 17th and 18th in Vancouver, which is the Heart Imagery Workshop. Am I correct, Daniel?
Yes, it's exactly the cleaning the past event, what we are talking about.
So during that event, you are helping, you know, the attendees walk through an exercise called Cleanse Your Dream. Is that correct? What exactly happens during that Cleanse Your Dream exercise?
Correct. Yeah, that's very important. Once we manage to clean our past, I would say the past that we are able to remember, because when we are, let's say, during the day, we are conscious, but there is a part of the past that we are not conscious much, and these are our dreams, and they are really heavy. People do not understand, but the imagery great masters, they said our dreams and our, let's say, real, if I can call real, daily life, they have exactly the same value from the imagery perspective, because it's an image.
Still an image, right?
It's just okay. An image. Your brain see an image. It doesn't matter if it's day or night. So when you are in your dreams, why there are so many accidents? People are dying when they are sleeping. They made heart attacks, and because the body gives the same importance to a dream that exactly that what's happened during the day. So during this workshop, I'm teaching some important techniques how to clean the dreams and how to achieve that peace of mind. How many days we are waking up in the morning and we have this, you know, this we call heavy heart. We had that dream or dreams during the night, and we woke up with this heavy heart, and we half of the day we were just haunted by how I could dream such a thing, this horrible things or whatever. So if we do not learn to clean our dreams well, it's another problem that might really happen in our spiritual quest in our spiritual existence, you know. So this is also part of the school of the heart that I'm teaching, and I hope a lot of people will really benefit of these techniques.
So, you know, since we were speaking about dreams over here, and you said that our mind, which is so true, does not differentiate between an image, which is real, and something that is a dream. So according to you, and according to what you teach, what are dreams? Are they images, or are they other dimensions? You know, like astral dimensions, like they say sometimes, or are they just images that are, you know, created by our subconscious mind? Just wanted to get a clear idea about dreams. Okay.
Both. So basically, we can dream our subconscious. I would say maybe 99.9% of people, they dream from their subconscious mind, which means images that happen in this life or past life, the subconscious mind are moving continuously for a simple reason, because we didn't clean it. If we would be able to clean all our action from all lives, you will not even dream. You will be in that state when you are conscious. You have these lucid dreams. So basically, our subconscious mind creates these dreams. This is the first part that I would say almost the whole humanity is going for. The second part is how the masters are dreaming, which means they don't have dreams. They just, like Yogananda is saying, right? You just put your body on the sofa and you get out in your, you call it the astral, we call it dreaming body in imagery.
Yeah.
And you basically, it's like you let a battery to recharge. Your body is like a battery, right? And you leave it to recharge. You basically, you are aware 24 hours, 7 days. Let me put it like that. So even in your dreams, you are working. In a sense, of course, you are working in a different way. You go to different dimension. You do what you have to do there. But yeah. Even when you sleep, the masters, they continuously, they are working. So, yeah, it's a fascinating subject, and I'm sure a lot of people, I'm teaching in heart imagery in the first module in the cleaning of the past and self-renewal. I'm teaching there is a specific part that is dedicated to dreams, and of course it's for beginners. Later I have classes for advanced that when I'm teaching exactly how to work with the dreams and how to be able in the dreams to be aware.
Yeah,
but it's a very interesting subject. It's part of the mystery school, right? So I'm sure people will find it very, very interesting.
Got it. Now, one of the other exercises that you know, you'll be going through is the Tibetan cleaning the past exercise. And when I read that, I remember that you spoke about your time in Tibet during our last interview. So could you sort of revisit that conversation? What brought you to Tibet in the first place?
Oh, I really didn't program to go there. Actually, that time I was just taking a trip for just, I heard about this beautiful ashram in north of Tibet, and I ended up in a completely different spot. My car just went astray, and I was stuck there on the middle of the snow and minus 48 degrees. And I just walk. Actually, I was sure I'm going to die. I didn't believe I'm going to make it, right? Because you don't have any car passing by. And I just walk like 48 hours. I was just singing and because I knew if it's going to happen, at least I'm going happy at that dimension. And I just I fall down there into the snow there. The monks found me. And
what was the weather like, really quickly before that, as you were walking?
It was like imagine instead to see the ocean of with water, you see the ocean of snow. So it was
snow all around.
Really,
wow.
Yeah, well, all the snow. And the Tibetan plateau is, because of the position, if you do not know how to where to go, and you can really get lost, and the high altitude and the wind. So I just ended up in this place, in this monastery, and I stayed there, couple of good years. I honestly, I didn't want to remain there. I loved working with the great masters, both of them, Karma Dorje and Tenzin Darje. But I was never, my heart was, giving me this, I would say, images to come back. And they could see it, actually, because they actually pushed me back to the world. And just came back, and I understood how important is there are things, because until then I wasn't a businessman, but I was teaching actually in the weekends, but I work in different companies, and but I came with completely different perspective, and I start teaching, I start working again for some good years, but I was doing in a different way, from the heart, from the perspective, from the unity of the heart, and it's a completely different approach.
In fact, your story reminds me of a book that I read recently, which is a fabulous book, by the way. It's not available in Canada, and it's called Jesus Lived in India. And so I recently visited India, and that's how I saw the book in a local bookstore. But anyway, I'm not sure if you've heard this story, but many years back, a couple of hundred years back, there was a person from Russia, I think his name was Nikolai. He was a traveler traveling in Tibet. He gets lost.
He was very famous, actually, and he wrote.
Yeah.
And there is in Moscow, there is a museum that is dedicated to his trips in Tibet. Oh yeah,
it's fabulous, because he speaks about his God or someone he worships. He talks about Jesus, and then they're sort of looking at him and said, wait, that sounds very familiar, because we have our texts, and they go through the texts and they talk about someone called Yeshu who visited that area thousands and thousands of years back.
Yeah.
Which was so fabulous. Anyway, action takers, if you haven't checked out that book, Jesus Lived in India, try to get that book. It's not available in Canada, but it'll really change your perspective, or maybe inspire you to learn more about that fascinating person named Jesus Christ. So thanks a lot for sharing that, Daniel. Love the fact that you shared that even though you were in Tibet, your heart was sort of urging you that your mission lies elsewhere, right? And so you knew it, your mentors and teachers knew it, and they urged you to go and pursue your mission as well. In 1991, you started meditating with a Romanian mystic lady, Lady Anna, who connected you with the School of the Heart, the school created thousands of years ago. So what school is this? Could you talk to us a bit about that?
Well, yes, it's the School of the Heart is a school that was created by the first person, the first violet race person that was born on this planet. The legend are talking about the first son of Adam and Eve, Adamson, that he lived around almost 400 years. And exactly on that, the third garden on Kapet Dag there, he actually created the mystic school, we call it the School of the Heart, that later, basically, we are talking about other really great master that they worked with this school, and they were leader of the school, and we're talking about Buddha and Confucius, and later Jesus, and so basically, the School of the Heart is one of these mystic schools where you have basically some, maybe the most important, I would say, spiritual techniques on this planet. And I'm talking about imagery, and I'm talking about heart meditation, and I'm talking about the spinal breathing, Kriya Yoga, and also the work with the children. So I am really honored almost 30 years ago when I heard about the school and this mystic. This lady, she connected me with the school, and I started to meditate, and then I connected with the energy of the school, and I could see, sense, and feel generation and generation of great masters. So basically, I'm really honored to lead the school today on our planet. And one of the things that soon we're going to have, and I'm really, really looking as a really good project, the School of the Heart, to have teacher trainings. And for me, I arrive at this stage when I really have to have a group of teachers that they have to teach all these ancient methods. And we're going to have very soon, we created a beautiful website. It's exactly the schooloftheheart.com. Easy to remember. And I'm sure a lot of people that are listening to this wonderful podcast, they are going to resonate in their heart, and they are going to think maybe it's time for them to start teaching the ancient methods that are coming from the School of the Heart. Maybe it's time for them to join this school that was created thousands of years ago by this master who understood that the only way to remember who we are is to reconnect with the energy of the heart. So I'm really looking forward to the School of the Heart to have more and more. It's time when this mystic school, it should become more a public school, if I can say that. And I'm very positive that it's going to be really a beautiful. It's going to make difference on the spiritual world that we are living.
Wonderful. Well, thanks a lot for sharing that. Now, speaking about mystic knowledge and mystic information that can be used to really change our lives and the lives of others around us, could you talk to us about Kriya Yoga? What exactly is Kriya Yoga? And, because Kriya Yoga is also called spinal breathing, if you could talk a bit about that as well, that would be great.
Well, probably, I'm sure many of our listeners, they really understand Kriya Yoga. They remember this ancient yoga spinal breathing system that was revived in modern times by Mahavatar Babaji through his first disciple and student Lahiri Mahasaya, the Lord, we used to call Lahiri Mahasaya. And Kriya, the spinal breathing, was brought into popular awareness more through Paramahansa Yogananda book, right? Autobiography of a Yogi. And I would say through Yogananda's work, because Yogananda, he introduced this practice, this meditation, somewhere in 1920, when he traveled from India in 1917. And the system is simple, consists of a number of spinal breathing, right? You just inhale from the base of the spine. And the intention is to rapidly accelerate spiritual development of any practitioner. It gives you this state of tranquility and God communion. And the interesting thing, Kriya Yoga can be practiced by any person at any age and on any posture. You can. I often practice in the airplane. You sit on a chair there, and you just practice. You just use the spinal breathing, and it's something amazing. The benefits of Kriya Yoga are really, it's an improvement of physical health, breathing ability, flexibility, relaxation, toning of the muscle, flexibility of the spinal, all these vertebras, and toning of internal organs, the liver, the stomach, the spleen, the kidneys. It's huge. I'm talking about the physical body, emotional body. You clean your negative energy, mental body, calmness. The spirit, you enjoy the life. So it's an amazing system that I really recommend to people that they are interested to practice something really, I would say, heavy. So Kriya Yoga is something that is it's easy to be to practice, and the effect is amazing.
Wonderful. Now, I had a question that I wanted to ask you, and I think you would be the right person to answer this question, but because you have a background in Tai Chi as well as Qigong, as well as the Indian versions like yoga, Kriya Yoga, meditation, and things like that. So I've heard something called the microcosmic breathing in Qigong.
Yes.
And I found that very similar to certain forms of Kriya Yoga, where you sort of visualize your consciousness, take it up the front channel, up to the third eye, and bring it all the way back down across your back. And something similar in microcosmic breathing as well, what they suggest. So are they two very similar?
Absolutely. If you see the system of Kriya Yoga, and not just Kriya, yoga overall, and if you see the system of Tao, and you are analyze to see how the great masters from China and the great master from India, they work their energy, you really realize it's almost, with small differences, almost the same thing. In a sense that in India, they call the chakras on the spine where this let's say, wheels of energy, right? Well, in China, for example, they say the navel chakra, they call it the Ning Mang, which is considered the gate of energy, like the door of the energy. So there are no differences in the technique by itself. There are different names, there are things that they maybe call different, but the technique is the same. You're right. That's true.
Got it. Thanks a lot for sharing that perspective with us. Now, my question is, have you met Babaji or Lahiri Mase, any of them?
Well, Babaji came twice in my meditation, and he gave me clear instruction how to proceed and how to do. Sri Yukteswar, in one of my previous life, he was my physical father. He was my real father, so I'm very connected with Sri Yukteswar. Lahiri, I always I consider him for me. It's really like a god. I really love Lahiri and his life story and how he spread Kriya Yoga all over the world. And I'm very connected with Yogananda too. I visited Encinitas now in San Diego a couple of days ago, and I took the whole group of students that they attended my workshop in San Diego. Each evening we went there and we meditated at the temple in San Diego. Amazing. I would say amazing. I could feel like I closed my eyes, I started the spinal breathing, and I could literally see that image with Yogananda that is called the last smile. Is the exactly 1 hour before him to do Mahasamadhi. There is this beautiful picture with Yogananda that smile like connected with God. I could really see him in front of me, and the students also they could feel the energy of the scent of the master. He was there, very, very powerful. It was a really unforgivable experience.
You know what's funny, that you know the fact that you mentioned and you described the smile that that you see him in your inner mind. When I was a kid in India, I didn't know who Paramahansa Yogananda was, but you have these posters, right, once in a while, and I used to pass by them, and it's, you know, Paramahansa Yogananda has an uncanny resemblance to my dad, actually. So I used to see these posters once in a while, and in some way or form, it felt as if he was trying to connect with me. You know, as if he was trying to remind me that you have a mission sometime in the future, you know. And so as I, over the years, later on, when I started the podcast and I got much more into these fascinating topics, it sort of brought back my childhood memories that, yes, I used to see these posters or pictures once in a while when I was in my school bus, maybe, you know, outside on the road. And it's, you know, it just brings back the fact that everything is connected.
Yeah, Yogananda, like, it's amazing how when you read this story, so his name, Mukunda Lal Ghosh, the real name, you know, and how through God realization he became a saint, a master, is such a inspiration for us to see that when in 1910 he was 17, he met Sri Yukteswar, and I still remember when I was reading years ago autobiography of Yogi, how he said that we enter a oneness of silence, like words they didn't care at all. I remember this sentence from this description when Yogananda met the great master Sri Yukteswar, when he said we enter a oneness of silence without words, without, suddenly he sensed the guru that he was looking for. It was in front of him, and for me it was such a dramatic description of how a great master met another great master. It's such an inspirational story that I'm really grateful. I feel in my heart such a I'm so appreciative for the fact that such a great master Yogananda took his time to write this book, just to let us, for us, something to see that is possible. He, that child, Mukunda Lal Ghosh, arrived at the God realization. So anybody can do it. For me, it was such an amazing, really, really amazing story.
Love that. Well, thanks a lot for sharing. Now, for many of our listeners are new to these topics. They're new to Kriya Yoga, they're new to Tai Chi, and they're new to this way of living. You know, the possibilities that exist for our life in this lifetime as well as beyond. So help us understand, who is Dhrunvalo Melchizedek and how did you meet him? What's the story behind that?
So Dhrunvalo Melchizedek is the first person on this planet that explained the sacred geometry, the flower of life, and the Merkaba, the body of light. The Melchizedek team, we call the Melchizedek receivers, is the team that actually takes care of our planet in this moment. And we have a Melchizedek, a priest that came in the holy books. It's written like 2,000 years prior to Jesus. It was Machiaventa Melchizedek. He was the first one on this planet who came to help us. And Dhrunvalo, he's one of this great master, and he is a walk-in, actually. This is not his body. And his books sold in millions all over the world, the Flower of Life, Living in the Heart, the Serpent of Light, the Mayan Ouroboros, and now we wrote a book together, The Journeys into the Heart. So his books are really probably considered as pillars of spirituality on this planet. So I'm so grateful that in my life I had the chance to be near this master. I'm very close to Dhrunvalo. A couple of weeks ago, I was in Sedona and we were meditating together in Arizona desert there. So I'm very, very fortunate to be near such a great master. And Dhrunvalo made a lot of change on this planet. His trips, he put this crystal and he helped the Kundalini of the planet to move from Tibet. Now is pointing towards Chile because it's a feminine energy. A lot of things that probably I should take another two or three interviews with you to talk about Dhrunvalo.
Got it. Now, you spoke about a Merkaba. Could you quickly maybe give us a brief overview of what a Merkaba is? Like you mentioned, it might take two to three interviews, but I'm sure many of our listeners are really wanting to know and fascinated.
Oh, sure. So the Merkaba is the body of light. Any person can activate it. In all the books, all the holy books, there are references to the Merkaba in a sense that in the Bible, for example, they are talking about that chariot of fire that Elijah came with, or the Archangel Michael, that he has these lights around him. So basically, there are specific energies and there are specific ways of activating this energy around any person. The Merkaba is very important. This body of light can protect you, especially of energies like radiation, pollution. So it has an important role. And not to mention, you cannot travel from one universe to another if you are not in one of this, let's say, vehicle. So Merkaba is like a vehicle.
So Daniel, you shared with us so many things today, so many stories, so many ideas, so many different types of exercises. You spoke to us about that. Based on what you've shared, what is that one action step that you'd like to share with our listeners today?
Well, I would go back to the heart, because I really believe the heart is really important. I would go back to this workshop that I just had this weekend in Toronto, people coming from Canada and USA and from Europe, there were a couple of people. And I would just say the most important thing is to stay in the heart, to learn some meditation, to stay into the heart. I would really advise towards this direction. Probably there is no more important time on this planet than now, when we are at this, I would say, at the intersection of our destiny. And I would say that's the reason I was talking about the school of the heart, because I know now this is the time when we have to really go towards that direction. And our life is going to be wonderful. It is wonderful already.
Got it. Action Tribe, to access the show notes for today's episode, visit our website, my7chakras.com/221. That's my7chakras.com/221. Go to the link. You'll be able to see all the quotes that we've shared today. You'll be able to see the action step, as well as the link that you need in order to learn more about what we are speaking about today. And before moving on, a word from our sponsor, Gaia.com. Explore the vast traditions of yoga with the Gaia original series Yogic Paths. Filmed across India, the 13-episode series captures the beauty of mystical Indian landscapes and never-before-seen ashrams while taking the viewer on a journey through the many traditions of yoga. While the practice of physical postures, called asanas, is most well-known in the West, understanding the full scope of this rich and varied tradition gives meaning and power to the yoga that we know today. Action Tribe, since you're listening to this show, it's clear that you are interested in topics such as chakras, yoga, and self-realization, and you know exactly where to go for audio content and interviews. And I sure hope you feel this way about our show, My Seven Chakras. But where do you go if you want a streaming TV video service with the same values and similar content? The answer is Gaia.com. To start watching this show, The Yogic Paths, as well as get your first month at Gaia for just 99 cents, visit Gaia.com/My7Chakras. That's Gaia.com/My7Chakras. Action Taker, I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did, and I hope you've subscribed to our show as well so that you can re-listen to this episode whenever you want on your phone. As you head out into the world to take action and transform your life, I want to take a few moments to talk about a very important topic that is not talked about much, and that is the topic of death. This is one of the most powerful concepts to mankind. Everyone is afraid of death, and yet everyone wants to safely experience a bit of it. Think about it. When we go to the movies, sometimes people are watching horror movies, thriller movies, adventure movies. People love skydiving, bungee jumping, and swimming with sharks. Even Steve Jobs spoke at length and so eloquently about the idea of death. So why is death so attractive a concept? Why is death, why do people want to get a taste of it? And that is because death has a purging effect. It has a way of separating what is important from the unimportant. Those who've tasted death, maybe in an accident or a drug overdose or a near-death experience, are never the same again. I don't want to sound unpleasant here, but take some time today to think about the positive side of death, because to be honest, life on Earth is so short-lived, we never know when it is our turn. And according to an ancient native Indian quote, Death is our eternal companion. It is always to our left and arm's length behind us. Death is the only wise advisor that a warrior has. Whenever he feels that everything is going wrong and he's about to be annihilated, he can turn to his death and ask if that is so. His death will tell him that he is wrong, that nothing really matters outside its touch. His death will tell him, I haven't touched you yet. So Daniel, as on today, what is your life calling? What is your purpose?
Love, unconditional love. This is the thing that this is so important for me. I was walking today on the streets of Toronto, and I could feel love for the trees, for the people, for the animals, for the stones, for the up, for the sun, and for the. I really felt love is the most important thing. My call, my just to feel and to experience love on this planet. It's the language of the heart. I would say the love is the language of the heart, unconditional love.
Got it. So Daniel, like you mentioned, you at this point in your life are doing so much for the world, right? You're traveling a lot, different countries, you're taking workshops, you know, you're sharing your knowledge and really transforming people's lives. And many of our listeners are on the path, you know, they're on the path of finding their life's purpose. They want to do something that's really meaningful in their lives. So talk to us about what was that defining moment for you that really changed your life. Was it a phrase that you read or an experience that you had or a person that you met? What was that defining moment that really changed things for you?
When I was a child, I was really enjoying that moment when I was just closing my eyes, sitting on that plastic bucket and completely connected with that time. And later, somehow I got it in this vortex of energies, and you know, I started to live more in the future and so on. So a really important moment in my life was when I reconnected with that present, and it came just suddenly like a realization. I felt how important it is to go back to that state of childhood when I was just in that moment and there are no memories and no future, just enjoying that relaxation, that way of living. And from that moment when I realized that I whenever my thoughts are going into the past, or they are trying to touch something from the future, I just stop and I just I am in this moment, and that's for me was a really important time in my life.
Well, thanks a lot for sharing that really, really profound moment when you went back to how you were as a child, your inner child. You tapped into your inner child, and I think many of our listeners have taken that as a cue to do that next. And with that, we've arrived at the last round, which is called the wisdom round. We did this round last time as well, but I'm curious to know if anything has changed at all with your responses or your answers. But help us understand, what is the best advice that someone has ever given you?
Stay in my heart. That was always the best advice. And it's interesting because I met a couple of really good. I was really lucky to meet a couple of really good great masters in my life, and it doesn't matter if they were the Tibetans or the Lady Anna, or it was Drambal or Melchizedek, or there were Kriya Yoga great masters, or Dalai Lama. I met him twice, or Anastasia coming to my meditation, or Babaji. The same thing came from all. Stay in your heart. Just stay in your heart and see, sense, and feel from your heart. So I would say the same thing. You know, that was the best advice that I've got. And I'm trying to follow as much as possible.
Thanks for sharing. Could you name a personal habit that keeps you strong?
Meditation. I'm really one of the person that really loves to meditate, not just in the morning. I wake up usually very early because I go to bed early. Around 9 o'clock I'm in the bed, around 3 or 4 I'm up. But I like to meditate when I work or when I make shopping, or in a sense that for me, the people think meditation is difficult. Meditation, it's easy. Quieting your mind, that's meditation. People, I share this secret in this interview. The meditation is the easiest thing that you can do. If you can quiet your mind, if you take out your thoughts, that's easy. So whenever you have a thought that you feel it doesn't work to feed energy with, just stop the flow of energy. Don't put energy in that thought and empty your mind, and you are in a state of meditation. Simple.
Wonderful. So what do you do during the first 2 hours of your day? What is your morning routine like these days?
Meditation. that's because early morning is really the best time to meditate. I do some Kriya Yoga. I do also some exercises from Tao tradition. And then I'm just going deep in meditation. I just quiet my mind and I just connect with the divinity. And I just, I'm blessed. I just feel this connection with God. And I say thank you. Thank you. I'm grateful to Mother Earth and Father Universe. I'm grateful to my higher self that helps me to be who I am. And so the first hours of my day I spend being appreciative for what I have. In my meditation there, I say all the time, and I really feel in my heart how fortunate I am, how lucky I am to feel that, you know.
Name a book that you'd like to recommend for our action takers today.
I would really, really recommend Dramalo and my last book that we co-authored together. It's called Journeys into the Heart. It's more like a manual. It's not just a simple book. There are just, until now on this planet, there are just a couple of books that there are basically 5 similar books that have been written on this subject through the whole history of humanity. There is Upanishad, there is The Secret Chamber of the Heart, there is Philokalia, there is Way of Pilgrim, the Song of Vaitahe, and Living in the Heart. So these are the 5 books similar written on the whole history of humanity. So the Journeys into the Heart is really it's a manual of it's maybe probably one of the most important spiritual books on this planet. I really, really recommend it.
So Action Tribe, I know that you really, really love to listen to the books that we recommend during this episode, and many of you purchase these books as soon as you hear them shared on the show. And that's why audible.com is offering you, Action Tribe, 1 free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial. You can get to check their amazing service. Now, Audible, in case you don't know, has over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, or Kindle, including books like The Chakra System by Anadia Judith, Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda, we spoke about this book today, and A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle. To download your free audiobook and start listening right away, go to our website my7chakras.com/free book. Once again, that's my7chakras.com/free book. And start listening. So Daniel, thank you so much for coming on our show for the second time and really sharing so much information for our listeners. Really appreciate it. Before you go, tell us something that you're grateful for, and then tell us how we can find you online.
I'm grateful being here speaking with you, Aditya. Yeah, this is important. I mean, this present moment, and I enjoy. I'm grateful. I'm breathing this beautiful energy. I'm grateful I'm here. I'm grateful we can speak. I'm grateful I can see a flower and I can speak with a child and with my friends, and I can understand so many things around me. I'm really, really grateful.
Got it. And your website? How can people find it?
My website is really easy. It's my name. So it's www.danielmittel.com, danielmittel.com. And again, I recommend also the School of the Heart website, which is www.theschooloftheheart.com. So the School of the Heart in one single word, .com. Two really important websites. You will find there a lot of exercises. And also in the School of the Heart, you will find the program for the teacher training. Some of you might, and I would invite you to listen to your heart and see if you want to, if you are looking further to teach this beautiful technique.
So there you go, Action Tribe. If you're listening so far, it means that you really connected with us today. You've connected with the topic. You really are interested in learning more. One of the reasons why I started this podcast is because I did some research. I tried to listen to information that I wanted, but I couldn't find, you know, the information that I needed. I couldn't find actionable things that I could do. I couldn't find the directions that I need in order to evolve. And that's why I created this podcast, to speak to those people who are here to serve, those people who have spent a lot of time transforming people's lives. And one such person is definitely Daniel Mittel. You need to go to danielmittel.com, go to schooloftheheart.com. You can check out wherever he's, you know, in the world in terms of giving workshops. You can get his book. We'll have the link for all of these things up in the show notes so that you can click and take action and transform your life as well. So Daniel, thank you so much for coming on our show, talking to us about the power of the heart and taking us one step closer to a human revolution.
Thank you, and blessing to all the people who are listening to us. Thank you, Aditya.
You are listening to My Seven Chakras. Go to mysevenchakras.com. Download your free gift, get inspired, and take action. Transform your life today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.